open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
There goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bison Report Radio podcast. I believe this one's actually going to come out on a victory Monday. NDSU heading out to Delaware and pulling down their first true road win of the season in relatively dominating fashion. I, of course, say relatively just because the defense gave up a couple that I'm sure that's a few more than they were hoping towards the end of the game. But all in all, at no point was that game really in question as far as who was going to get the dub. So I think you have to be really pleased, especially when you're talking about a top 20 team as far as the rankings are concerned. We're a little light on the news for obvious reasons. You know, we're recording this for our kind of scheduling purposes before Coach Entz's press conference tomorrow, which of course we'll be live tweeting at the Bison Report Twitter account. We'll have the things Coach Entz said post up from Micah the intern. We'll have you guys covered. Absolutely no problem with that. It's just right now, as we're recording, we have very little news. The news that we do have, Griffin Crosa, freshman kicker stepping in. So actually this is North Dakota State's backup kicker stepping in for Jake Reinholtz, was named the special teams player of the week for his performance against Delaware. And Coach Entz had some interesting things to say in the post-game press conference for this. In that James Hendricks was likely going to return next week, and that Demetri Williams' groin issue is going to be kind of just something that they manage all season long and isn't really something that can be fixed via surgery. And I'm going to ask Trevor a little bit later if he's ever had anything like that where he just had to deal with it for a season, because I think that those injuries are a little bit more complex than the, all right, you sprained an ankle, we'll see you in 3 weeks type of injury. But before we get to all of that, I want to have a little treat for you guys, and that is my boss, the only boss I have left, really, in the 24/7 Sports Network, and that is Tim Fitzgerald. Fitz from GoPowerCat.com runs just a phenomenal site, one that I am lucky enough to contribute to, down at Kansas State. And as most of you know, Coach Klieman got a huge win at Mississippi State, the first SEC road victory in program history at Kansas State. The Cats are 3-0. People in Manhattan are excited. A lot of the old NDSU coaching staff down there with Chris, of course. Trev and I's guy, Gene Taylor, is the athletic director. He was the athletic director at North Dakota State for 13 or 14 years. Anyway, just a lot of Bison family down in Manhattan. And so we're going to play this interview with Fitz for you guys right now.
Here with Tim Fitzgerald from Go Power Cat. Big things going on in Manhattan, Kansas this past weekend and really all season long. If you don't mind, Fitz, give the Bison Report Radio listeners just a brief biography. How did you kind of get your start? What's been, you know, the progression of you had a a print newsletter and a magazine, and just kind of explain to people who you are.
Well, yeah, I started up, my wife and I started PowerCat Illustrated in 1998. I had started a different K-State magazine for the Wichita Eagle, the biggest daily newspaper in the state. They started up a magazine and books division at one point, so I ran that for a year and a half. Then they sold the magazine and books division, so suddenly I was working for a small company. I'm like, if I'm going to work for a small company, I probably should work for myself. So we started up PowerCat Illustrated in 98, and in that during that football season, my buddy Bobby Burton, who was my recruiting guru out of Texas at the time, called me up and said, hey, I'm part of this new thing called Rivals.com. We want you on the network to run the K-State site. And I said, well, I just started a magazine. I can't bite both off. So we didn't. We kind of put that off till the end of football season. So I was one of the founding websites in December of 98, that fall of 98 when they launched, of the original Rivals.com that's now gone through many different reinventions. And then my contract was up a couple years ago, and we switched over in the winter of 2017, like the February, we shut down the magazine. It was just losing money like crazy, like every other print product. You know, if you don't have a the ones that exist kind of have alumni deals, you know, they have something to prop them up, and that wasn't something K-State was going to do. So that went by the wayside, and we focused solely on the internet. And Ross, I don't know what time in my career and the evolution of this business, I went from a newspaper a magazine with a website to a website with a magazine, but it was clear that it happened. We were operating a magazine in the shadow of the website. And so shutting it down freed us up to do more stuff on the website. And then 24/7 came calling and asked me to switch networks when my contract was up, and we did that in September of 2017. So we just started our third year with 24/7 Sports, and it's just incredible. It's just a whole different world, and we're loving it. We're loving it. We're rebuilding our site because you kind of start over from scratch, but it's been really rewarding.
Yeah, that's something I think that happens to everyone, whether it's pro sports or college sports, and it's happened over the last decade where magazines with websites, you know, that have become websites with magazines, and the pretty big majority of them have just become, you know, websites. That
right.
The print thing is tough, certainly. We've got Bison Illustrated here in Fulton, but that's it's a completely separate thing. And, you know, like you said, it's kind of propped up by the athletics department or propped up by the alumni association or the team makers. And it makes a ton of sense what you're saying. So yeah, for those of you that don't know, when things became, I guess, picked up a little steam with Coach Kleiman, Fitz and I kind of got put together by the big wigs, or maybe the medium wigs at CBS. And so we've been working together now, or I've been working for Fitz more accurately at Go PowerCat. And that has been a really interesting transition for me. I think people have enjoyed having me around. I've certainly enjoyed the big time college football aspect of the Big 12, but this, I think Fitz has gone about as well as you could have possibly hoped. Yeah. Or the people around there could have possibly hoped. Take me through those couple of days. And obviously the important thing is not you being interested or introduced to me, but take me back, because people from Fargo that didn't pay as close of attention as some might not realize just how negative this hire was viewed.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I had done my homework. We had a long list of possible candidates that, you know, and we had it narrowed down eventually to the final two, which was Neil Brown and Coach Kleiman. And honestly, I didn't think Gene was going to do it just because I could sense the backlash out there. But to Gene's credit, he was confident that it wasn't just a good football coach. It was the right guy for here. And Neil Brown, even though he's kind of struggling right now at West Virginia a little bit, is an outstanding football coach, but he's a Southern guy. And the thought probably was, even if he does really well here, he's not going to stick around. While Chris this kind of seems like the kind of place he would like to be. And he's talked about how similar it is to Fargo, which is amazing because he went through a summer in Manhattan and still says that. But it didn't feel right to a lot of fans. It felt unseemly. It was Gene Taylor hiring his buddy or his drinking buddy, and whatever derogatory way they wanted to put it, they wanted big time. They didn't want FCS. They wanted big time. And I got the hire. I got the hire from the very start because I'd done my homework, and I realized what this guy's doing isn't normal. You don't take over a winning program like he did and make it better. There's not many coaches in the history of football who've done that, who take over a really dominant program like the Bison were under the previous coaching staff. And then, you know, we get elevated, Craig Bohl moves on, and boom, you're better winning 4 out of 5. So I got it. And I think once people, you know, there was that small window between the hire and the press conference. And once I got to know Chris just a little bit, they're like, okay, yeah, I like this guy. And to the credit of Kansas State Athletics, they unleashed a social media barrage, which they had never been able to do under Bill Snyder, who didn't want any of that nonsense around. And they made Chris really accessible to the fan base through social media, and people immediately started liking him. Now, there's still some doubters out there. You will still see them not wanting to admit they're wrong. So now the same people who judged him on 0 games think winning 3 games isn't enough information to judge him on, which is an interesting conflict there of logic. But, yeah, it was not a popular hire because they wanted this guy or that guy or, you know, Bear Bryant's ghost. I don't, you know, it's just fan bases sometimes get unrealistic about things. And Chris Kleiman's the perfect guy for this job. For all the outward things you can point to that he's different in Bill Snyder, personality, I'm willing to adapt to modern, you know, things like social media, the way he conducts his team in his locker room. They are so similar in football, it's stunning. So it wasn't a huge adjustment for the players in terms of not X's and O's, but the idea that we're going to be physical and we're going to work hard and we're going to get better through the season. Those are things a lot of coaches talk about, but Bill Snyder and Chris Kleiman put that in practice, and now we're seeing it really work. And people are over the moon with what's happening.
Let's talk about the differences a little bit. You mentioned the similarities. I know Chris has mentioned on a number of occasions how, and Gene has as well, the similarities between Fargo, what you have to do to succeed in a market like Fargo, succeed in a recruiting footprint like Fargo, and all the same types of things that you have to do to succeed at a Kansas State. What's different, though, with this staff, and besides just the availability, social media, energy level, what have you noticed, whether it's Connor Riley or Jason Ray or even Scotty Hazleton, what have you noticed that's been different about the feel around this program? Because I can sense it. I mean, I can feel that there is a different energy around Kansas State right now.
Well, from, you know, you talked about the access. That's a huge part of it for us. I mean, from 2004 on, Coach Snyder cut off any access for the media, except maybe on a bowl game and media day before the season with assistant coaches and coordinators. So you didn't really build up relationships with those guys and get a better understanding for the program. Because when you talk to those guys, particularly coordinators, you get a lot more nuance to what they're trying to accomplish and understanding of things. It's almost like an interpretation of the head coach. And it just became all about Bill Snyder and really cutting off all angles for the media and thus the fans to know how to enjoy the program. And football at Kansas State kind of became an obligation. Bill Snyder built this. I mean, it was nothing before him, and he turned it into something of substance for a long period of time, so you couldn't stop going because it's Bill Snyder. And it just became a job almost for fans, and that's not the way it should be. Chris Kleiman's come in with this really positive energy about him. And, you know, what it took place on Saturday at Mississippi State with the muffed punts and the mistakes, Bill Snyder would have been a miserable wreck after that game, even if they had won, because of the mistakes. And he would have hammered on guys because of the mistakes. That was his style. Very old school. Chris is just the opposite. Chris is like, these things are going to happen. They know they have to fix it. But, guys, we need you for future games. Don't get down about this. You fix it and let's go on. So he's kind of, instead of having, I got to fix this because coach hates me, it's, I got to fix this because I love coach. He's kind of turned it around on him where, you know, the players wanted to run through walls because Coach Snyder demanded it of him. But now they want to run through walls for Coach Klieman. And so that's how it's really, really different. Now, will it work over the long haul? My guess is yes, because it did at North Dakota State. And there's no reason to think that approach with players would not work at this level when it worked at that level. It doesn't matter. That's just being able to connect to players. He has the respect. He's not letting them get away with a bunch of stuff. And it's just a different way to go about it. And it's really registered with fans and certainly the players. The players love him.
Yeah, that's a famous Kleinmanism. Football's football. And, I mean, he nailed it. Like that's why you see North Dakota State have a 9-3 record and 12 true road games against the FBS. It's why, you know, you're seeing his level of success now. If you can coach football, if you understand football, you understand football. And FBS, FCS, but whatever, it truly doesn't. Doesn't matter. You can either do it or you can't. And I want you to put this Mississippi State win kind of into perspective. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the first true road win against an SEC opponent in program history. And not only that, but a game that, and I'll admit, I did a really extensive summer scout series for you with the opponents that were on the schedule. And I think I gave a 20-30% chance, something like that, to go down to Mississippi State and get a win. This was a Mississippi State team. Granted, Jeffrey Simmons, first-round pick. Montez Sweat, first-round pick. Nick Fitzgerald, SEC's all-time leader in rushing yards from a quarterback. Gone, certainly. But this was a team that came to Manhattan and absolutely had their way.
The curb stomped them, yeah.
And so... Not that it's just because I don't think that's fair to Snyder and his staff. I don't think that the difference is new coach, but the direction of the program, I think it has to be sort of reexamined. This win is something where you reexamine the direction of the program, you reexamine the ceiling of this season.
Yeah, it is. It's been. I didn't think they'd win that game. You told me before the season started they would win that game. I would have laughed at you just because it was such a mismatch last year in Manhattan. And it wasn't just because of those guys you listed who were incredible players and they couldn't handle Nick Fitzgerald at all as a running quarterback, which is ironic considering K-State uses running quarterbacks under Bill Snyder. Just the whole roster. You could tell they were bigger, faster, stronger, period. And they shouldn't be. All of those things, because K-State was known in the Big 12 as the physical offensive line, and they weren't physical that game. They got manhandled. They were just good enough to make it not uglier than 31-10, even though it felt like 42-10. It didn't quite add up to the score and how the game felt. Well, they go down to Starkville. Now they're on the road, and they're playing a lesser version of Mississippi State, but they're also doing it just their third game under a new coach and new systems. They clearly won the line of scrimmage. If you look through the stats, there's no indicators that K-State wins a game. They had more turnovers. They had less yardage. There's nothing there that says K-State won other than the final score. And watching the nuance of the game and understanding how much K-State controlled the point of attack, offensively particularly, and defensively. And the fact that Chris Klieman's program went in there and only rushed for like 146 in the game, but it might as well have been 300 the way they beat up Mississippi State. So all those things you saw in Fargo, they were going to be the fresher team in the fourth quarter, came to fruition. They outscore them 14-3 in the fourth quarter. And how do they win the game? They win the game on a pass off a play action that they bid on. And why did they bite on it? Because they stayed so committed to the running game over and over and over throughout the game. Mississippi State was so worried about that, they left a receiver wide open, and Skylar Thompson threw a 15-yard, you know, just lollipop pass to Dalton Schoen for a touchdown. It's a fun brand of football, and it's such a basic brand of football. If you know football, you know, they've just gone back to the roots of the game and extracted the elements that translate to now. And I bet you Coach Snyder's watching this, and I haven't spoken to him, and really he's not talking to the media right now. But I bet you he, as a coach, as a brilliant offensive mind, because he really did revolutionize the game and then just kind of got stale with it, he probably loves this. He probably so appreciates the art and the science of what they're doing from a football standpoint. He's probably very happy.
Last question, Fitz, and I'll let you go. Where have your expectations for this season? Like, where did they begin and where are they now?
I thought we were talking about a 6-6 team. You know, I thought they'd make a little improvement, but it was going to take a transition to put in the systems, because while they're similar, they want to run the ball and be physical, they go about it in a much different way. And certainly on the defensive side of the ball, they've been a very passive bend but don't break defense. And now they're not an all-out attack defense, but under Scotty, they're a much more pre-snap aggressive. They're showing things and trying to change up the quarterback. So that system is wildly different from what these guys were used to. So I thought there'd be an adjustment period. Brother, there's been no adjustment period. They came out from the start against a good Nichols program and beat them, and then took on a Bowling Green program that isn't very good and just trashed them. And then they go to Starkville and win. I mean, it's hard to define where they're at, because not only do they go to Starkville and win, they won making a plethora of mistakes in the course of that game. And they still won on the road against an SEC team. And I believe it happened last in 1910 under Pappy Waldorf's Big Six championship team, the only conference title K-State had won in football before Bill Snyder won in 2003. So, I mean, they hadn't won on a Power 5 non-conference road game since they went to Miami in 2011 won. That was a huge game, and Miami ended up not being very good that year. This is a good Mississippi State team. They're going to win some games in the SEC. They're going to be bowl eligible. And now K-State goes into an off week. They're 0-0 going into the Big 12. But by God, I think fans trust Chris Klieman will have them ready to go to Stillwater, Oklahoma, and play Oklahoma State in two Saturdays and be a pretty darn good football team.
All right, Fitz, thanks. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Trev, did you have a chance to catch the Cats at all?
Yes, I did. They played pretty well. I mean, they got up early, 10-0, pretty quick. Then it was a pretty hard-fought battle, but that's a quality-looking football team. A lot of things that I noticed that are similar to the Bison, I mean, by no coincidence and obvious reasons, but it's just fun to see that those same principles that were applied to us in Fargo are being carried over to Manhattan and being effective early. So kudos to that coaching staff. I wish them obviously nothing but the best. I'm rooting for them from a distance. And I think there's nothing but great things ahead for that program.
Absolutely. And I mentioned in the news I wanted to talk to you because you were a guy that got nicked up occasionally in his career. Did you ever have anything injury-wise where they couldn't do anything about it? Because it seems like that's where they're at with Dimitri Williams right now. And I just want to get a player's perspective on an injury that you have to manage, but that you're not going to get surgery or you're not going to get extended time off for it to heal.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, the biggest year that was – probably the hindrance for me was my freshman year. I had a stress fracture. That was brutal. That's kind of how that was. That one was misdiagnosed. Unfortunately, I was having some really weird symptoms that weren't consistent with a stress fracture. So that one was kind of the first one. And then the other one that wasn't really a surgery is I separated my shoulder. I had to get a numbing agent put into that before every game. So I do the warm up, do the numbing, and that was in 2012. And then obviously the hamstrings too. I battle those on and off. Fortunately, didn't miss a game my last 2 years for a hamstring or at all. But yeah, man, you have. I mean, there's guys battling that left and right. And, that shoulder deal was pretty brutal. I couldn't do a lot of upper body stuff for quite a while, but you know, I was just another guy doing the same thing, and it's just part of the program and the mentality that we have, and it's, I think, necessary because genetically and just naturally gifted talent wise, you have to go up against guys that are a little bit more blessed in that factor. So it does take beating up your body quite a bit, and that's just part of the deal. So you know what you sign up for when you go into it, and that's just kind of the way we roll. But yeah, the groin thing, slow healing type injury. Hopefully Dimitri can stay in the rehab room very often because it's going to be necessary and just get the proper treatment he needs so he can be ready to roll on Saturdays.
All right, let's dive into this contest. You had a chance to watch live. I had a chance to watch live as well. Unfortunately, because of some weird rights issues, the game was not available on ESPN Plus, which means the replay also wasn't available on ESPN Plus. So these are kind of unfiltered takes from Trev and I based on one viewing and not my normal, you know, go back and rewatch the game two or three times just to make sure I had a great understanding. So these, like I said, these are a little bit unfiltered, and we'll get into it. But I want to ask you, Trevor, about the block punt, because I think that is sort of, well, it really is the formula to beat every, and I'm using air quotes, which is just great for a podcast, but every quote-unquote juggernaut or Goliath. Every team that is a heavy underdog wants to jump on the favorite. And that's kind of what Delaware did, hopping up 2-0 there. Anybody in where you guys were 3-4 touchdown favorites, and maybe you didn't know how much you were favored by going into the games, but do you remember anybody kind of jumping on you like that that rocked you guys a little bit?
So really kind of two comments about the whole thing is I found it really ironic that the first points of that game were a safety because – it wasn't 48 hours before that. I was just telling my wife, Carla, that I started thinking back in my whole entire football career, high school included, even middle school. I do not recall one safety ever occurring on me. And someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I really do not recall a single safety happening. And then less than 48 hours later, those are the first points of the game. And then, but the time that I can think of where a team jumped out on us, ironically, another CAA team, was when we played New Hampshire in the semis in 2013. They jumped out, what, maybe 10-0 on us? I think they went down and scored or something like that. And they had the ball to start the game. And then we had a quick turnover. It was a quick pick. And I don't know if we blocked the field goal or whatever it was, but then we racked 52 unanswered on them. So, I mean, there was no panic by any means. But that was kind of one of those deals where we went to the sideline after the turnover and we were just looking at each other like, what are we doing? I'm sure something similar was kind of going on in New York on Saturday. But like you said, when you got a group of composed guys, you know, they put in the preparation, they just kind of look at each other and go, all right, this time it's done messing around. So, the result kind of showed there, but if you're Delaware, that's exactly what you had to do in order to win that type of game. So kudos to them for being prepared, but fortunately for the Bison, the game's not won in the first quarter. So,
Kobe Johnson.
Stud.
Yeah, I mean, what did you think of this more of a feature role? And I know that it might have had something to do with Dimitri Williams not being available in this game. You know, Matt was almost tongue-in-cheek in the post-game press conference talking about him having one game left in his four-game rule. I got to tell you, this kid is not redshirting. And I think if you haven't been living under a rock, you've figured that out by now as well. This kid is something special, man. He's got the juice. That's That's the word that keeps coming to my mind when I watch this kid is, boy, he's got the juice.
He runs extremely hard. He's extremely fast. He's physical. He's not the biggest kid, but this kid is everything you want in a running back. He is very impressive. He's a special cat. And how he found Fargo, North Dakota from Georgia, I don't know. I guess people can make jokes and say, how did I find Georgia from the Dakotas as well? But I don't know. I'm glad he's wearing green and gold. I'll tell you that much.
Once again, just an efficient afternoon for Trey Lance. I think you have to be impressed by this kid. 18 of 23. I love that AYA stat, adjusted yards per attempt. That's over 11. That's otherworldly to be at that level on adjusted yards per attempt. But this kid, I mean, what else can you say? I think that his development, he looks like, I don't know, third-year quarterback in his eighth or ninth game, you know, like a redshirt sophomore midway through conference play. I just don't get it. I don't understand how this kid's playing at this level.
He looks like, yes, he looks like he's played in the Dakota Marker game. He looks like he's played at an FBS school. He looks like he's played in the national championship game, and it's almost like nothing phases him. Pretty incredible for a kid that young. In his third collegiate start. I'd say my favorite stat of him isn't necessarily an eye-popping one. It's the fact that he only had six carries. You know, I think we talked about it either, I don't know, either the game preview or the recap from UND, but I did not like that he was getting, you know, 10-plus and 16 carries, whatever he had in those first two games, because – coming down the stretch, he's going to need to rely on his arm a little bit more. Yes, use your dudes when you need to use your dudes, but he needs to develop as a passer long term in order for him, for just his health. Selfishly for him, his pro development. But I just like the fact that they don't have to utilize him in the run game as much, because when you need it, now you have it, and you don't want to rely on him getting rushing carry totals in the teens every week. So that was encouraging to see.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there in the sense that I was with Josh Swanson, Swanee, obviously a Bison Report and Bison Illustrated, and it was either him or his brother that kept yelling, "Stay healthy, stay healthy," when Trey had the ball in his hands. And I looked at him and I said, "Did you yell this when they had designed runs for Carson and Easton?" He goes, No, I don't think I did." So I'm not really sure what the narrative is or why this keeps happening, because it's on message boards and Facebook comments and things of that nature. We love those. You know, we love interacting with you guys, the listeners and the fans. I mean, it's what we do this for sure. But I do find it interesting that people are so much more concerned about Lance's health than his predecessors. But I will say this, you don't want him to be throwing the ball 25 times and running it 20 times. That's not necessary. You're right. I mean, it's a good way to get him hurt. And I don't think that'll be part of the main game plan moving forward. I think they'll find ways to use him kind of judiciously. I did notice a little bit more of the make a guy miss and scamper out of bounds after the first down has been achieved, and some smarter rushing attempts from Lance, certainly than maybe we saw in the first two games. Not that he was being dumb, but just he tried to run a guy over with his throwing shoulder. I mean, that's not something that we necessarily want to see. One thing I do want to keep seeing, though, is spreading the ball around. We're talking about checking with Ryan Perrault last week after Lance completed passes to nine different pass catchers to see if that was some sort of a school record. Well, if it wasn't before, it probably is now. Trey completed a pass to 10 different receivers this weekend on his only 18 completions. So Noah Gindorf, Hunter Luebke, Zach Mathis, Garrett Meatstick Malmstrom, Ty Brooks, Jimmy Capuras, Ben Ellison, Christian Watson, Adam Cofield and Phoenix Sproles all caught a pass. No one caught more than three. How difficult is this Bison offense to match up with if they're not going to identify a go-to receiver?
Very. You got that many dudes. I don't know what else to tell you. Good luck, maybe. Obviously I'm biased in my thinking, but I mean, you have Phoenix Sproles, who is developing into a phenomenal football player. He had there was one pass he had, I think it was his long catch of the day. I was on the right sideline. And a beautiful ball by number five. And then the very next play, maybe it was two plays later, I can't remember if it was a rush or maybe like a quick check now, but it was to the left, and he's downfield blocking a guy about 20 yards deep. And that's a valiant effort. I mean, you're talking, he's running downfield, making a hellacious catch on the right side, very similar to his touchdown against Butler type of deal, kind of the Willie Mays catch.
Yeah.
Kind of that type of deal. And that'll take the wind out of your sails. I mean, you're not exactly breathing clean air after that and coming up feeling all giddy. I mean, I know you're excited about making a big play, but there's no way Phoenix Sproles was feeling fresh. And like I said, the next play or two plays later, he's leading the charge and whoever he was blocking downfield. And it's like, man, that's tough. And you're striking fear into people, and they turn on that tape and they're like, what do you do when the leader of their room's doing this, and then you're completing the ball to nine other guys, including two other receivers who had more than one catch? I mean, I don't know. That's why I say good luck, and it's my answer is very effective because, I mean, these are multiple guys who are capable of doing things north and south.
Yeah, it's got to be difficult, like I said, to just match up with the entire team. I mean, you can't shade anybody. If you shade Phoenix, they're just going to throw it to a tight end or Christian Watson or run the ball. I mean, it's for as many questions as I had with this pass-catching group going into the season, and, I mean, I was told by people that know how good Trey Lance was, but I don't think – you can't expect this. You can't expect what has happened so far. The kid's playing on basically, and I love Easton Stick to death. I mean, I think he's one of the best Bison of all time. The kid is no question Bison Hall of Famer. But Dreb, there's not a drop off in play. maybe you disagree, but I don't see a drop off in play.
I don't. I mean, there are certain things that, I mean, Easton had probably the worst term for a quarterback ever, so this isn't a knock on 12 by any means, but he had a little bit better game management. But that's simply experience, and I'm basing that off of what have you done for me lately kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm basing that off Easton's 2018 season versus Trey Lance's 2019.
Right, which is fifth-year senior,
yeah,
compared to your third game on the road against a top 20 team.
And he looks smooth, buddy. I mean, yeah, as far as the drop off, the eye test says no. There are things that I noticed that he can still get better at, which is very, very positive thing, because you don't want it to be it's like a Trevor Lawrence deal. I mean, he's still taking names, but that kid comes shooting out of the gate his freshman year and he looks like a number one overall pick, and I think he still very well could be. But people anointed him so quick that it just puts an immense amount of pressure on him. Especially if you're listening to your own press. But number five, he's a special cat, and it's just good to see that he still even has room to improve. And based off what I've heard, I think he is the type of guy that wants to achieve for that impossible perfection. So seeing these guys work together, a kid that I'm very high on right now is the Mathis kid. I don't think he has fully understood how his body works. Very athletic, very skilled, very long. I think once he fully understands how his body works, coming in out of breaks faster and being able to go up and get the ball, turn it around, doing a full 180, I think you're looking at an unstoppable pass threat with these guys. with the tight ends. You got Phoenix, you got Mathis, Christian Watson is very athletic, and then obviously five chucking it around. Ty Brooks using him in multitude of ways. It'll be fun to watch. That's what I know. So I just hope these guys strive to get better every week. And I don't think that they would have been recruited to Fargo if that was the case. So I'll be honest, I think we're just scratching the surface. This is probably the most talent I've seen on a Bison team since I put on the pads myself.
The one thing that the Swans and I were talking about this weekend was we just couldn't figure out why Delaware A. We weren't really sure how Pat Kehoe won that quarterback job for the Blue Hens. And B, we didn't understand why they kept going to any of their Pat Kehoe stuff. They clearly had two different packages, you know, ready to go for that game. And it was so clear to us that Nolan Henderson was more effective than Kehoe that it was almost relief when they kept Kehoe in the game. I mean, we're talking two attempts or 2 for 9 for 11 yards and a pick. You can't have a worse day at quarterback, really, than 2 for 9 with 11 yards and a pick. And Henderson was just the opposite. You know, he was over 10 yards an attempt, 75% completion, threw two touchdowns, ran the ball well under duress. I didn't get it. Could you understand what was going on there from a quarterback perspective?
No, I was thinking the same thing. I really don't understand. I mean, you got a guy that is clearly better than Henderson. So I don't know the rhyme or reason. It could be a mental thing where they don't think that this kid can come in and take the first snap under center. He's, what, a sophomore? He should be developed by now because he's been – I don't know if he redshirted or not. So he's in his second or third year in the program. The only rationale that I could think of is that Kehoe, he started last year in Fargo, right? If I'm not mistaken. I don't know if that's exactly accurate, but that could be my only reason why. I mean, if that kid started last year in Fargo, he has experience against a team like NDSU.
He has experience Henderson. Playing very poorly in the Fargo Dome.
Yeah, I mean, he threw his first – was it the first play where Jabril Cox picked him off?
Two games in a row. We'll talk about it in a second. But, yeah, threw a pick six to Jabril Cox in Fargo and then threw one to Michael Tutsi his first time dropping back in Delaware.
Yeah, I don't – so, yeah, I mean, I really don't know. My only thing is that he's got age on him and maybe there's – maybe Noah Henderson is just a gamer. I don't know. Maybe he's just not good every day and then Saturdays he's better, which as a coach that – I mean, you hate that, but – couldn't tell you. We're not in the locker room and I practice every day. There's got to be something that they see there. But based off what we're watching in numbers, it makes zero sense.
yards per carry. That's a number that is very impressive. And I think, again, and Dylan Radins has talked about this, as far as the stemming and the stunting and the alignments that are happening up front for defenses, you know, nobody's playing them like they would play themselves. What I mean that is nobody's just lining up with 2 6 techs, a 1 and a 3, and going at the Bison. People are jumping all around, and you've got 3-man fronts and 5-man fronts, and I mean. That you couldn't possibly throw more schematically at this offensive line, and they really just seem to be handling their business.
You got a smart group of guys, which is very necessary, but they even talked about it a little bit in the Kansas State, Mississippi State game. A lot of the times they're blocking a spot, and they know that these guys have to fill certain gaps. So when we have a power or off tackle, whatever it is. There's a lot of times guys are blocking a zone and they're blocking a spot. And they understand that if I fill this spot and I beat you in this spot, no different than a wideout getting to be on your spot on time. If you have five guys on the front line doing that, you're going to find holes. And that's why you're seeing 7.2 yards per rush, because if you got guys blocking a zone and they believe in that, if I beat you to this spot and my shoulder pad is lower than yours, I am going to beat you. And the 7.2 doesn't surprise me, because it's been going on for years. Those guys work their tails off. The coaches do a phenomenal job of teaching them the proper techniques to be able to get in those locations after the ball is snapped. And even more so, you got guys getting to the second level. So if you have, if you got someone pulling and their job is to get to the second level, they're doing it in a hurry. And that's why you recruit athletic linemen, guys who have done stuff in track and field, or maybe in basketball they were a center, and you get guys that can move up the field. Because I'll give you an example. There's a clip, it's kind of funny. Tyler Gimmestead, it was in the 2012 season, we were playing Sam Houston State, and he is running with Crockett. I don't remember exactly what the play was, but he's running with Crockett downfield. Now it looks like someone shot him with the BB gun from the stands, because he ends up falling over. But Gimme was moving, and I remember playing Gimme in basketball. Gimme could move; he had good feet. And now you're just looking at the next generation of that, and it's reflected in the numbers. And exactly what can't remember who you said you had talked to. Maybe it was Dylan or Zach, but. Really not a shocker to me.
Yeah, it was Dylan that had that really detailed answer at the press conference about how they've seen more stuff in two games than they saw all last year. Whether defenses think they can fool Trey or fool the young offensive line with a center who hasn't played a ton before, I don't know what the deal is. I got to ask you, are you worried about the defense? Because I think that's something that the Bison internet community is at least kicking around right now. A little bit of defensive concern. I thought there were some tackling issues. I didn't think they fit a bunch of stuff poorly or covered all that poorly. I think there's just some missed tackles. But, I mean, here's my honest opinion. 3 minutes, 29 seconds to go in the third quarter, it's 33-8. And my opinion is if you're up 33-8, with 18 minutes left in the game, the game's over. We're not, this is done. So I personally would qualify the Coleman touchdown and the Amachi touchdown as junk time. It's just a personal opinion. I mean, I didn't feel like the balance of the game was in doubt. And by my own personal definition, that makes it junk time. And you might disagree. There might be fans that disagree, and that's fine. That's kind of what this thing's all about. But I thought it was junk time. What did you think?
I'm not concerned about it at all. I mean, once you get to that point in the game, you're talking about what you want to do after when you get back to Fargo. I did it plenty of times. My buddies did it plenty of times. So a lot of guys that were a part of that building up that 33-8 lead, you're kind of checked. And I've seen crazier happen. But when a team's checked out of it. I looked across the sideline all the time, and all you got to do is look at body language. That'll tell you everything. But I do think there are things to clean up. I wouldn't fully disagree that there aren't things to get better at. So partially I'm glad that Delaware put up 14 in the fourth quarter, because a couple of those plays were very easily avoidable. And I don't think – that can happen against Jake Mayer at UC Davis next week. I don't think that can happen when you're playing South Dakota State in a rivalry game. I don't think it can happen in the playoff, because you're not going to have that luxury necessarily. So it's good to build off on tape, but as far as the specific game, looking at it, when you really go in depth and go, oh no, teams are going to be able to find something to pick apart. I'll tell you this much. When UC Davis watches this game today, tomorrow, whenever they do, they're shutting it off after the third quarter. They're going to get into game prep. They're not going to look at that fourth quarter. Like you said, it was 33-8. I mean, it was even 33-5 before that. Teams aren't worried about that. They're worried about the guys they're going to see when it's the first snap. They're worried about seeing the guys that they're – have got the majority of the snaps in the first three games. that fourth quarter stuff is it's relevant, but it's not concerning.
And I think a big part of the reason that it's not concerning for me is the pass rush production. You're giving me a little bit of a hard time about just how much I love pass rush.
Biggest pass rush guy I've ever met in my life, Ross Uglum.
But before the pod, we were talking about the 7 sacks that the Bison were able to come up with in this game. And I got to tell you, I think Dave Braun called a hell of a game. I really do. He was dialing up pressure, and they weren't getting beat. You know, and that's something where early on in the season, like you and I agree, would we prefer that North Dakota State gets pressure with 4? Of course we will. Well, if you're not getting pressure with 4, get creative. Bring pressure. And I thought that they did an excellent job of bringing pressure when appropriate and not exposing themselves. And one of the reasons they're able to do that is just how good, in my opinion, is just how good the corners are. Marquise Bridges, Destin Talbert, and Josh Hayes are really on a high level. And if you've got corners that won't get embarrassed in man-on-man situations, you can bring the noise and the funk, and they brought both. Jackson Hankey with a sack, Derek Tuska with a sack, Jabril Cox with a sack, Brendan Cook with a sack, Logan McCormick with a sack, Spencer Wagey with a sack, and Aaron Mercadell and Cole Karch shared a sack. Trav, give me some pass rush love.
You have 6 guys with a solo sack, and then you got Merck and Cole Karch with a half a sack. That's a pass rush team. I told you there was nothing to be concerned about in the game preview. I can't remember if it was a game preview or a game recap. You love your pass rush. I know that's what you're looking for. You got it. They must have listened to us on the pod. Either they're mad at us or something. I don't know. But, kudos to Braun. Kudos to Cole Green. That's a lot of sacks, man. That is a lot of sacks. You don't see that often.
Just another day at the office for Jabril Cox with six total tackles, 2 tackles for loss, a sack, and 2 pass breakups. This kid's just he's next level. And I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on it. I felt like it needed to get pointed out because he really is next level. Speaking of next level, though, I need a comp. I need a player comp from you on Michael Tutsi because this kid had 11 tackles, led the team by a wide margin. Doss Weber had 7. It's maybe not great if your 2 safeties are your leading tacklers, but I digress. Tuts had 11 tackles, a tackle for a loss, and that game-changing interception to kind of kick things off there. You're looking at a guy with 3 picks in 3 games. He didn't get one against Butler, did he? No, he didn't. That was Jimmy. So he's got 3 picks in 3 games, 3 picks in the last 2 games. You know, loses his likely all-conference, if not all-American running mate there, a 5th-year senior captain. And all the kid does is, you know, go full Nick Collins on the thing. I mean, give me a player comp for – it doesn't have to be necessarily somebody you played with, but who's this kid remind you of?
The only thing I can think of is it's not Colton Hegel because he's a lot faster than him. But I hope Higgs is listening to this and I get a phone call from him. So that's a direct shot at a buddy. He'll give it right back to me. Don't worry. He's his own player, to be honest with you. I didn't see enough of him back in the day, but I would say a smaller version of Schomer.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't see enough of him play, but based off highlights that I've seen, I mean, he's, you know, like I said, he's smaller, but he's the kid's a ball hawk. He's always where the football is at. I mean, he's a smart player. And he just finds a way to make the plays that he needs. So I can't wait for Jimmy Football to get back and watch these two work together and find their stride because I think you're going to see quite a few turnovers, and that's partially because of number 42. I won't get into details there, but that kid is going to allow those guys to run all over the field. So you got smart guys like Tootsie and old Jimmy Football, you're in good hands. So just another safety duo to talk about for years to come.
All right, Trev. Thanks, buddy. We want to thank you guys, the listeners, for sticking with us this long. We hope you enjoyed the show. Hey, we hope you enjoyed the new intro. I sure get a kick out of it. Think it worked out pretty well. Thanks to Andy Rickoff with his help on that. We definitely appreciate that. The number one way that you guys can support us, support me and Trev in this venture, is to become a VIP member over at Bison Report. We are running two specials for y'all right now. We've got a 30% off of annual VIP. That's 30, just like your 3-0 Bison. 30% off of annual VIP subscription. We also have the monthly option, which is $1 for the first month and $9.99 after that. Cancel anytime. Check us out. It's going to cost you $1. Can't, you know, it doesn't get any better than that. You can check us out for a month. Check us out for the next four Bison games, Bison football games for $1. We really appreciate that. The other way you can support us is to leave a 5-star rating on whichever podcast app you use, whether it's iTunes Stitcher or SoundCloud, however you're getting this. Give us a review. Give us 5 stars. We really appreciate that. Thank you guys one more time, and go Bison.